Well, those pensioner benefits are something we've protected through this parliament. We made a promise, and it's a promise based on values, a value of supporting people who've worked hard and saved hard all their lives. Those values haven't changed. Now, we haven't written our manifesto yet, but if you were going to be looking for savings in welfare, pensioner benefits is not the place that I would first turn to. I would look at housing benefit for the under 25s, where there are plenty of people listening to this programme who can't afford to move out of their home. But if you're on benefits, you can get housing benefit under the age of 25. There are people, for example, on incomes of £60,000 or £70,000 living in council homes. I'd look at that issue.
Right, so you would be relaxed if there were some of your fellow ministers, including possibly the Prime Minister, Downing Street, saying he is minded to repeat the pledge. You'd be relaxed if that pledge were to be repeated.
Well, look, I am not writing the Conservative manifesto today, but the commitment we made to pensioners was based on a set of values, a belief in the security and dignity of old age. That's not going to change. And can I make this point? We have taken a difficult choice in the space of the welfare we provide to pensioners, including pensions. We have increased the pension age. We've kept it going up in line with life expectancy. That has saved more money than any other decision I've made as Chancellor. £500 billion for this country. And I think the choice is, yes, go on making sure that we can afford generous pensions, make sure we can afford pensioner benefits, and do that by making sure that the pension age goes up with life expectancy. That's the sensible approach to this issue, as it is to so many others.
So just final word, I mean, you would like to keep those, if you think you can afford it, you would like to keep those universal benefits for pensioners. It would be a good thing.
Our values, the values of David Cameron, the values of the Conservative Party, are based on security and dignity for people in old age. And I can't write the manifesto today.
And I'm not asking you to. I'm just saying your gut feeling is that they are a good thing. Because, you know, some people say that it's ridiculous that wealthy pensioners get the money, et cetera, et cetera. But your gut feeling is they're a good thing. If you can afford to keep them, you should.
Can I just say this issue of the wealthy pensioners, and somehow if you took the benefits away from them, that would solve the country's deficit problems and borrowing problems.
No, but they'd be pitching in with the rest of us.
It saves a few tens of millions of pounds.
But they'd be pitching
in. It is not where you need to make the substantial savings required to make sure that this country continues with the plan it has, which is to reduce its deficit and make sure it's a country that pays its way in the world.
So people listening this morning will say you sound pretty relaxed with the idea of keeping them, albeit you haven't written the manifesto, we don't know what you're going to say, but you are pretty relaxed with the idea that we could keep those benefits, or a Conservative Party could commit itself to keeping those benefits after the next election.
I think people can be clear that a Conservative government would look after elderly people who have worked hard and saved hard all their lives.
Wider one. You're making a speech today and you're going to talk about choices, and you're going to talk, I think, about the next round of cuts, as it were. We already know there are going to be more cuts. Are you going to say anything more specific, anything we haven't known before about where those cuts ought to fall?
Well, I'm going to say we need to find a further £25 billion of cuts after the election. We have to make decisions about where, of course, those cuts are to be found. We have to make the decision about whether we seek them in departments or whether we seek them in the welfare budget. But the reason we need to make those savings, this is not an end in itself. This is a means to an end. And the end we seek is a country in control of its own destiny, that has an improving economy, that can compete in the global race, and a country which is saddled not just with a high deficit, but also a high debt, is one that can't do those things. So I'm saying, look, yes, the economy is improving. I'm visiting a manufacturing business here in the West Midlands this morning that is taking on people. That's great news, and it's part of a country that is on the rise. But if we don't continue to work through our plan, if we take the decision to say, well, look, we're through the worst and we'll squander the gains we made and we're going to go back to the bad old habits of borrowing and spending, then we will be back to square one, back to economic ruin. And my choice is, no, work through the plan, deliver that economy that is creating jobs and economic security for all.
So if it is, 25 billion was the figure you mentioned there, wasn't it? 25
yes.
billion, which I don't think you've mentioned before. Have you put a specific figure on it before?
Well, look, if you've looked at our budget tables, you've been able to work out the kind of sum we're talking about.
And
independent bodies like the Institute for Fiscal Studies have made their estimate of what it is.
It's roughly the same.
So here's
the question then. I mean, you teed it up, as it were. Do you then go to departments? So you're taking a lot off defence, a lot off transport, etc. Or do you go to welfare? And you've already said that you're not going to go for pensions, which are, half of the welfare bill. So where do you go?
Well, I have said that we made very substantial savings by increasing the pension age. I think we do have to look at the welfare budget, because I think it would be an odd choice as a country to say, look, we've got a high deficit and we're going to deal with that by just cutting the schools budget or the science budget or something like that. I think the rest of the world would say that's a very odd choice for Britain to make.
But half of welfare would be a very odd
choice. It would be a very odd choice for a country that wants to compete in the future to make, and to leave untouched this enormous welfare budget. And that ultimately is where you can find substantial savings. Now, I'm not saying it's easy. These are difficult decisions. But ultimately, the politicians over the next year and a half who are going to come on this programme and say, look, we can offer you this, we can offer you that, they can't avoid the central point, which is the country's still borrowing too much. And we need to make substantial savings. That requires difficult choices. And it's only by working through the plan, as we've done over the last 3 years, that you've got that improving economy that you're reporting today.
What some of your colleagues say is all right, if you're looking for areas to cut spending, you've got to be much tougher, for instance, about the NHS, where spending is ring-fenced. Get rid of the ring-fence. Is that a possibility?
Well, look, the NHS has had to make savings, but we've used those savings to put it into the front line of our National Health Service. Again, ultimately, these choices you make are based on values, and the values we have are ones that support our National Health Service as something that millions of people in this country...
And you support the ring fence.
Well, again, look, we have not made commitments for the future, but I think you can take it from this interview that the values we have are not changing values. We are, you know, we have been absolutely consistent in what we said to people before we got elected, what we've said to people through this period of government. We have sought to protect the key services that people depend on, like the NHS. We have sought to protect the vulnerable, but we have asked more generally in society for sacrifice. And the result of that sacrifice is we have an economy that is growing faster than most in the Western world. We have jobs being created. We have manufacturing improving. And that approach,
we've got to
carry on working through that plan. And as I say, there are going to be lots of people out there in the next few months saying, you know what, let's not talk about the deficit anymore. Let's not talk about Britain's economic problems anymore.
But here's the question.
I'm saying we've got to focus on
a lot of people on your side want to talk about as well, and it's this one, and I suppose it's the political one underlying everything. Are people going to feel better off soon? Hard-working people, as you might put it, people in work, are they going to, we've been reporting companies are better off, the government in a sense is better off, deficits going down. When are ordinary people going to feel better off?
Well, there's a hard truth, which is this country is much poorer because of the economic collapse 6 or 7 years ago, and families feel that. What is the answer? I can't wave a magic wand and make the country richer. The way the country gets richer and families get richer is by being a competitive country that attracts jobs to this country and investments.
When are they going to feel better off? Well, is it going to be this year? Is it going to be before the election?
The people who've got these new jobs that are being created are feeling better off, and we're forecasting for earnings to go up. Inflation has come down. But ultimately, you can't have a cost of living gimmick. You've got to have an economic plan. I mean, ultimately, people know that they're only as wealthy as the country they live in. And that's the approach we need to take.
We've got to leave it there. Thank you very much.